Last time we discussed the difference between local variables, which are known only within the function in which they are declared, and global variables that are known throughout. I'm going to look at some examples now that distinguish between local and global variables. So if you'll look at your handout at a function called write as meters. In this particular case, we want to write a function that is given a measurement in feet and inches and converts it into meters and prints it out. If we look at the main first, the main simply to exercise that function, we're going to be given two integers, the feet and the integers, the feet and the inches, and this function will print the equivalent meters, and that's it. It won't return anything, so I'm declaring it as a void. Void write as meters. And the main simply asks you to enter two integers representing the number of feet and the number of inches. Then we call write as meters, and then we print out the feet and the inches that you've put in earlier. So let me run that program first, and then we'll look at the function itself. So enter two integers representing the number of feet and the number of inches. So we put in, let's say, 5 feet, 9 inches. It prints it out as 1.7517, and it then prints out 5 feet, 9 inches. Now, if you notice that the way I wrote the program, this line, the line of 1.7571, is not printed in the main. It's printed in the write as meters function. Notice there's no write as meters, because meters is not known within the main. Meters is only known within the function. There's no variable called meters anywhere in the main. Similarly, notice that the feet and the inches is printed out in the main after we returned from write as meters, which means that write as meters did not change feet and inches, since I printed it out after I called write as meters, and it printed out the same exact value that I put in. So now let's look at the function. So the function is called by giving it the feet and the inches, and here is the function. Now immediately notice that feet, inches, and meters are all local variables. Meters because it's declared within the function, and feet and inches because it's a parameter in the function. Even though the main also had a feet and inches variable, totally different set of variables. There was a feet and inches in the main, a different feet and inches in the function. So the feet and inches that you put in the main, the arguments, are sent over to this feet and inches, which is the parameter. We then calculate the number of total inches by multiplying 12 feet plus inches, convert by meters, because it's divide inches by 39.39, and print out the meters. Now, it's important that you realize that this is, in fact, two separate set of variables. So let's draw it out as you might do that when you trace it. This is the main. The only variables the main had was feet and inches. Those are the only two variables the main had. That was the declaration. The function, write as meters, had three of its own variables: feet, inches, and meters. Nothing to do with each other. You put in 5 feet 9 inches. The main calls the function and transfers the value of feet to feet, 5, and transfers this to 9. It transfers the values over. Keep that in mind, that'll be an important point a little bit later on today. Now, how did it know to put the feet into feet and the inches into the inches? Was it because they have the same name? No. What is it? The order, the placement. The first argument goes into the first parameter. The second argument goes into the second parameter. It has nothing to do with the fact that they're named the same. They could have been called K cat and dog for all the computer cares, or X and Y. Okay? Now we enter the function, and the computer does 12 times feet. Which feet is it using? This one or this one? This one or this one? This one. Good. 12, because it doesn't know about this anymore. This, it has no knowledge whatsoever about this. 12 times 5 is 60, plus 9. So meter inches now becomes 69. Notice that we changed the value of inches. Didn't change this one. Local variables. Now we do the calculation. We divide this by 39.39. I don't know, what did I get? Let me just run it again so I have some reasonable numbers there. Okay, 5 feet. Yeah, you probably remembered correctly. 1.75 something. So therefore, this now becomes 1.75 something. The function now prints out 1.75 meters. And now the function is over. It's a void function. The function is finished. This is an important point. When the function is finished, because these variables have what we defined last time, the automatic storage class. What does that mean? Automatic storage class meant that the variables were created when we started the function, and they are totally destroyed when the function is over. We say the storage is deallocated. Storage is taken away. Nothing to do with local or global, but the fact that the variables came into existence when we call the function, and they go out of existence when we leave the function. Therefore, at this moment, as soon as we finish with this statement, and we hit this last brace, which in essence is there's a return that's in here, that moment, these get destroyed. They're gone. They don't exist anymore. And anything that's in them is gone, never to be seen again. So now when we go back to the main, so we're back now to this statement, and the computer says, is the same as feet and inches. It prints out 5.9, even though we had changed inches to 69, nothing to do with this. So that's an illustration of local variables. Okay? Now, I pointed out to you earlier that global variables are bad. And the reason they're bad is because when you have lots of functions, if they all share variables, you never can tell, unless you're very, very careful, what the status of those variables are at any one time. And as the programs get larger and larger, it becomes much more difficult to take care of that. So we're not going to use global variables. Okay, that's like a big no-no in programming. Let me look a little bit more carefully now at the mechanism by which this occurs. Remember, I showed you that the value is sent over. That mechanism of sending information from an argument to a parameter, from the argument to the parameter, is called a call by value. And to illustrate that, let's look at another program, and I'll ask you for a moment to try to figure out what that program does. So let me close this and open up the program called call by value, which just simply illustrates that procedure. So you have this function in front of you, the main and the function, and trace that through. Okay, I'll give you 2-3 minutes to trace it through in the same way that I just did this one. Let's trace it through together. So we'll begin at the main. The main defines two variables. N, which is given the value 3 immediately, and sum, which has no value at this time. We now say cout N equals, and the value of N, and the only N that we have at this point is this one, So it will print, I'll print the results here, n equals 3. We now call the function compute sum with an argument of n. So let's move to compute sum. At this instant in time, as soon as we hit the function, again, because these are automatic variables, they're created at this moment. Notice I didn't create them before, I'm creating them when we get to the function. The function now has two variables, sum, which it initializes to 0, and a parameter n. Now this is the key point. In a call by value, and the reason it's called a call by value, is that the value of the argument, which was n, is sent over. So it's the value is sent, not the name of the variable, not where that is stored in memory, but whatever was in here is copied into there. At this moment, we no longer know anything about this because now we're in compute sum. And compute sum says 4, nothing. N is greater than 0, it is. Sum plus equals N. So sum now becomes 3, because it's sum plus equals sum plus N. Come back to the top of the loop, minus minus N. N now becomes 2. And only this one, we don't know about that one. Is N greater than 0? It is. So once again, sum plus equals N. So this becomes 5. Come up again, minus minus N, this becomes 1. Is N greater than 0? Yes, it is. So we once again do sum plus equals N. So sum now becomes 6. Minus minus N, this becomes 0. Is that greater than 0? No. So we print a message. See out, N equals N. N equals 0. Return sum. Now, at this moment, what is sum? Sum is 6. When I return sum, I'm finished with this function. Again, immediately all of these variables get destroyed. They're gone. But I have a 6 in my head. That's what's being returned. That 6 comes here and is put into sum. So now I get a 6 over here. Okay, compute sum, when it finished its job, destroyed itself and took the value that it returned and put it into sum. Yes? No. Has nothing to it could have been called cats and dogs. It's because whatever was here is being assigned to sum. If you would have had an X here, it would have put the 6 into the X. It's the assignment statement. This sort of takes on the value that it returned. Because compute sum was an int, that means it gets a value. When he said return sum, not because they were called sum, because you return the number 6, and then that comes and is being assigned to sum. You understand? Has nothing to do with the fact that they happen to be named sum. They could have been called something totally different. It's that this takes on the value that is being returned, and then there's an assignment statement which says takes whatever that value is and put it into sum. So sum now becomes 6. This is totally gone. And so now when I get to the next statement, and it says C out N equals N, it's now N equals 3, because that's the only N that it knows about. And then it says, see out sum equals sum. Sum equals 6. Okay? Is that clear? I think you look confused. Right. So what is the value that is in sum when it said return sum? 6. Not the fact that it said that it was called sum. Whatever was in that return, that number, it's like playing tag, you know, running tag. Okay, the 6, that's what you should know about, the 6. Not the word sum, think of the 6. That's sent back.
Back to the function.
It's sent back to the name of the function, and now it's being assigned to whatever you assigned it to. There's an assignment statement there, right? It says sum equals. Sum is assigned. What's the statement say? The statement you have here says sum is assigned the value of compute sum n. Remember, we read from right to left. So if compute sum n, when it comes back, contains the number 6, it's now putting it into this variable.
Okay, so compute sum then is the global variable?
There is no global variable. There's a function. A function called compute sum,
okay,
which is returning a value, just like square root. When you call the square root function, it does its thing and gives you back an answer. Compute sum does its thing. In this case, the number 6 is its thing. And it brings it back and puts it into sum. The fact that it's called sum here and called sum here is irrelevant. This could have been called x, assuming that this was x, this would be x, and this could have been called y. Now, we have a bit of a dilemma. Dilemma is as follows. In the previous function, right as meters, we returned nothing. Right? It did something, printed it out, but it didn't return a value. In this function, it returned a single value. But that's all a function can do. A function can return either nothing, it's either void, or it's in float or whatever, and returns a single value. What happens if you need to compute two values? For example, suppose I give you a number in meters, and I want you to write a function that converts it to feet and inches and returns both those values to you. We have no way of doing that unless we use global variables, which we don't want to use. Because the function can only return one number at a time, either nothing or one thing, as this one did. But if we want to return feet and inches, how do we return two values? For that matter, you might have a program to do that asks you to read some data from a file. I had told you to write a function to read data from a file. There were two pieces of data, each line, an A and a B, two constants, and you had to return those two values. How do we get a function to return two values if a function can only return one value or no values? Does everyone see the problem? Okay. So we need to look at another way of doing this. And so let's look at the next example that I give you, which is called a call by reference. This is another method by which, as we're going to see in a moment, not only does the argument send its variable to the parameter, but the argument, this will happen as before, but the parameter will also send its value to the argument. A two-way street. This is a one-way communication. All these examples, the main sent information to the function, but the parameter didn't send anything back. In this case, we're going to see a method of matching them up, so whatever you do to this ends up here, and whatever you do to this ends up here. So if we'll have several parameters, we can return multiple values, call by reference. And it's very similar to this, with a slight difference. So let's look at the assignment, the program rather, called call by reference. And let me work your way through this. So we start with the main. Everyone has this on their handout. So once again, I will put the main down, and the main has two variables. A variable I, which is starting out with 7, and a variable j, which is starting out with 3. Okay? Now, look at the function header, the function prototype. It's very similar to function prototypes before, with one slight difference. Do you see what the difference is from what we've done before? Instead of simply saying int int, we say int with the ampersand, the and sign, int the ampersand. This is going to be an instruction to tell the computer to use the call by reference mechanism, which you haven't yet seen, which I'll show you how it works. Now, Let's again follow through. We'll get back to this in a moment. C out, I, space, and J. So right now it's going to print 7 and 3. And now we're going to call the function order IJ. Just like any other function that we've ever done before. But let's look at that function. Here's the function order. Let's look at it. The function order has, again, three variables. Just as before. P, Q, and temp. Okay? So far, nothing's different. However, notice that unlike previous cases, I say int ampersand P, int ampersand Q, to correspond to the int ampersand that I had before. What this means is as follows. When I matches up with P, instead of sending the 7 as I did before, remember before I put a 7 over here, that's a call by value. Instead, I just draw an arrow to I. I link the two together. In other words, I'm saying that P is referring to this value. Not that I'm taking the 7 and putting it here. That was a call by value. But by creating that, using those symbols, again I say that Q should refer here. No value is being sent over. This is called a call by reference. Now, the function still doesn't know anything about I and J. I and J are local variables. So it knows nothing at all about I and J. It only knows about P, Q, and temp. Temp is an ordinary variable. Now, here's how it works. If P is greater than Q, so we look at P, and we see that it points to 7. So we say, if this is greater than this, it is true. So temp should get the value of Q. So temp gets the 3. P should get the value of Q. Now remember, what is P? P is this, and this is Q. So P gets the value of Q. I think I made a mistake here. Temp equals Q, that I did, and P equals Q. I made a mistake here in this program. Okay, this should say temp equals Q. P is greater than Q. 7 was greater than 3. So I want to switch them. I want to put the temp. This should say temp equals P. I don't know what I have on your sheets, but this should say temp equals P. Okay, and let me follow along now. Let's back up. Start from the very beginning. Go back to the main. The main has I is 7 and J is 3. Okay? C out, I and J, so it prints out 7, 3. Now we go to the order function. Order IJ. So I go to the order function. This line. And this line now has a parameter or a variable P which takes on the location or is a reference to I because of this symbol. And similarly, Q takes on the location of J rather than getting the value as before. Now we have a variable called temp. Again, we don't know anything about I and J now. I and J is hidden. But we're going to refer to these values using P and Q. So if P is greater than Q, it is, that's true, then temp equals P, So Tem should get the 7. P, this is P, should get the value of Q. So this now becomes a 3. And Q, which is this, should get the value of temp. So temp gets put into Q. Notice how I draw the arrows? And you might want to use colored pencils or colored ink to keep track on a test. See the difference between what we've done before? Before we sent over a value. That was a call by value. This is not a value, it's not going over. It's a call by reference. In other words, we point to the location. We refer to another location. Doesn't change the fact that I and J are local variables and P and Q are local variables. Main doesn't know anything about P and Q, and order knows nothing at all about I and J. They're still local variables. Okay? Now I'm finished with this function. Notice there's no return statement here. We're not returning any values. So what happens when you return? This whole thing gets wiped out. So it's gone. So I come back to the main, and I'm up to this line now. And I print I and J. I is now 3, and J is now 7. In effect, what I've done is I've returned two values rather than using a return value, like the one before, compute sum. Two things came back. Now, it didn't really return them, but because we were able to refer to the variables by this call of reference method, we in fact were able to change two values. Yes? Exactly. Look at my diagram, which will help you remember. In a call by value, the I and J would send its value here, but it's one-way street. They don't change back. In a call by reference, it's two ways. We sent the original information over, and then we were able to change the I and J back. Why did we change the I and J back? Because we did a sleight of hand. We used these arrows to refer to that information rather than their values. And this is how you would then be able to return, in effect, we're not really using a return statement, but we're able to return more than one value by making their parameters call by reference. How do you show that you want to call by reference? Very simple. You, in the header of the function, each variable that you want to be a call by reference, you put the ampersand in front of it. The word ampersand, it stands for address of, which is what those arrows really mean. We're telling the parameter the address of the original variable, where it was stored. Instead of telling what's in it, you know, instead of telling me the name of the person who lives in your house, I give it the address of your house, which in effect gives me the ability to talk to you. And the corresponding function prototype is shown here. Int ampersand, int ampersand. Yes. If you were to get rid of the ampersands, you'd get 7373. All the work that the function did would be wasted because it would switch its own private set. When we come back, it was destroyed. It's as if nothing happened to I and J. And that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted a function that looks at and changes and switches them. If you need to switch two things, you've got to affect two things, not one thing. So we need a call by reference. Let's look at another example. I want to write a function that, given a measurement in meters, returns that measurement in feet and inches. In other words, I'm giving you one number, and you're giving me back two numbers. I'm giving you, what was the last time, 1.7 meters, and you're giving me back 5.9. Not printing it, because then we wouldn't have to return anything. That was not a problem. But we want to give you back the 5 and the 9. So I'm giving you back two values. If I'm giving you back two values, I've got to use a call by reference. Let's look at that function and work it through. In fact, before, to prove that this works, I really should have run this. So let me just run it. And there you go, 7337, as I said. But let's go back now to close this and open the convert from meters. Now again, to show you what this does, okay, I'm going to just run it. Enter the number of meters, whatever it was, 1.7, whatever it was. Okay, close enough. 1.75, okay. And I want it to print, I want it to give me back 1.75 meters equals 5 feet 8 inches. Okay? And I want the main to do the printing, not the function. Notice that the main is going to do the printing, not the function, which will show that it's giving back two numbers. Okay, so let's look at the program. Main. The main has a variable called meters. The main has a variable called feet and inches. Let's forget about the function prototype for a moment. The main asks you to enter the number of meters. It reads in the number of meters, which was 1.75 in this example. We then call the function convert from meters. Notice that the type of convert from meters is void. Okay, you saw that the lineup, first of all, it shows you that as a tip, which is useful, but since this is pretty small, you could have just peeked up here. If this would have been a long program, this is very useful, so you don't have to go peek up here and see what it is, but as you can see, it's right over here that it's void. Incidentally, you can go into things like symbols, okay, and look at global functions for your project, and right away, all the functions, which in this case is main, this is from the one beforehand, because I didn't recompile this. Let me recompile this. So, why is this still here? I don't know, forget about that for now, but if something was working, it would say here, write from meters, and that would be able to, you'd better see it there as well. I'll figure out why another time it's not working. In any event, enter the number of meters, 1.75 or whatever. See in meters, you read that number in. We're now calling the function convert of meters. Now, the function has three arguments. Meters, feet, and inches. But if we look at the function prototype, you see that the first argument is just float. That's going to be a call by value. I'm going to send the number 1.75 to the function, the value. But the other two, feet and inches, are call by references. That is, I'm not sending over the value of feet and inches, because for that matter, there is nothing in feet and inches right now. We didn't even calculate it now, so there's nothing to send over. But I'm sending the location of feet and inches to the function. So I now jump to the function. So the function receives the value of meters, 1.75, and it receives the location, that arrow, for feet, and the location for inches. Now, in this case, I happen to have called them the same name, feet and inches. In the previous example, I called IJPQ. So the fact that they have different names or same names is not important. But in any case, feet here points to the feet in the main. Inches here points to the inches in the main. Meters here, however, has its own private meters. That's a local variable, private value. I now have another variable called length in inches. I do a conversion. Now, something new is here that you've not seen before, sort of incidentally, and let's see what I have here. To convert meters into inches, you multiply it by 39.39. Okay? Everyone understands that? That's a constant. However, that is always going to be a number with a decimal point. Is that correct? Because you multiply something by 39.39, the result is going to be by a number with a decimal point. I want to convert that from a float, that result, which is a float, into an integer. I want to convert the result of meters times 39.39, which is a float, into an integer. I can do that by doing something called a cast. You say you cast one type into another. Fancy word for converting one type to another. by putting the word int in parentheses in front of this expression, it takes this expression and converts it to an integer. If you wanted to convert it to a double, you'd put the word double in here. It's the concept of a cat. First we do this, the arithmetic, that's a float result. Then we convert it to an integer. So length in integer is now a number without decimal points. I now divide it by 12, which gives me how many feet it is. And since that's integer division now, why is it integer division? Because length in inches is an integer. So if this is integer division, it gives me the whole number of feet. And this gives me the remainder. And it puts this into feet and this into inches. But what is feet and inches? It points back to the feet and inches in the main. So when I'm finished this, which I'm now finished this, and I pop myself back to main, what happens? I find that now there are values in feet and inches that before there weren't any. And so now I print C out meters, 1.75, feet, inches, it now prints that message out. So remember, the printing is being done by the main. So obviously we've returned two values. We've sent it meters. That's like before, call by value. But feet and inches are not being sent values, they're being sent locations. So when the function changes feet and inches, it's changing it in the original location, function disappears, the original location now, poof, mysteriously has some values in it. Call by reference. That allows you to return more than one value. And notice it's not an all or nothing. You can decide which you want to be call by value. In this case, the first one is a call by value, and the last two are call by references. Now, this is a little bit of a confusing concept. It's very important that you get this very, very, very clearly. And you have in the exercise book an entire section on call by value, call by reference, which you need to trace through. I promise that there are going to be a lot of questions like this on the next exam. Okay, they're not hard. They're very easy, in fact. So just do it and get 100 on the next exam. This is your chance. Okay, I'm going to give you another example to do. You have a handout. I'll give you about 2-3 minutes to do it and see if you can do this at this point. This would be a typical question on an exam. Of course, when you take your exam, make sure that you read very carefully the function header. Don't overlook. Ask yourself now, is there an ampersand there or is there not an ampersand? Overlooking that totally screws up the result of the problem. So pay attention to the details. Parameter passing exercise, I think it's called on your handout. Okay? So I'll give you a few minutes. Work this thing through and let's see if you get the right results. Okay. Let's run it first and see if you got the right answer. And you should get 459, 444, 459, 459. Did we get that? No? Okay, so let's trace it through. Again, when you trace a program through... Oops. Recording record. When you trace a program through, it's important not to think. Okay, because then you end up with the answer that you think is rather than what the computer is going to do. Okay? You need to follow it without any real deep thoughts. So we come to the main, and this is the first statement. The main has a variable x, a variable y, and a variable z. And they are each assigned the value of 4. Okay? We now jump to function 1. So, function 1. Let's look at function 1. We can see right away that it has 3 integer arguments. So, let me just look at function 1. Here's function one. It has arguments A, rather parameters A, B, and C. So when I called function one with X, Y, and Z, the value of 4 was placed here, the value of 4 was placed here, and the value of 4 was placed there. Call by value. And it says B plus plus. C equals A plus B. C out, so here's where we'll put our output. A, B, and C. 4, 5, 9. Everybody with me so far? Now, we are finished with function 1. So what happens? On your paper, cross it all out. It's gone. And we're back to the main. Which is now, I just do this line. That's what we're up to right now. Is that what everyone with me? And it says, X, C out, X, Y, Z. So we have 4, 4, and 4. Everybody got this far? Are there any questions so far? Yes? Right. X, Y, and Z. Look, just look. Don't think. It says, C out, X. Look at X. X says 4. Don't think Y. Okay, just, you're the computer now. X is 4. So you print it, whatever, just look at it. Like, print it out without deep thoughts. Okay. We now call function X, Y, Z. Right away, you notice from the function prototype that there's something different about function 2. It's int ampersand, int ampersand, int ampersand. So let's look at function 2. Here's function 2. It also has an A, B, C, but the A is pointing to X. The B is pointing to Y. And the C is pointing to Z. No value is being sent over. Call by reference. B plus plus. C equals A plus B. This is, by the way, now this exactly the same as before. The only difference was this line and this line. C equals A plus B. So C is A plus B. So C becomes 9. C out, A. What is A? 4. Then B. What is B? 5. What is C? 9. So far, exactly the same as this one. Are you with me so far? Now we're finished with function 2. So what happens when you finish function 2? Erase it. And if I was really careful, I would erase all these little arrows if I had time to do arts and crafts. But I didn't have a very good kindergarten education. Okay. And now I'm back to the main, which was this statement. Now what does it say to do? Print out X. Well, what is X? 4. Then it says print out Y. What is Y? 5. What is Z? 9. So we've managed to send back two things, while before we didn't send back anything. Very critical that you understand this, and between now and the next class, make sure you do a lot of exercise in this. This is going to be something that we're going to just take for granted and use over and over and over again. And you can't, if you don't know this, you can't do the assignment. Because some of those things, functions that you were asked to write, have to return more than one value. Some don't. Yes? They've got to match. The function prototype has to match the header. The header has to match the prototype. And if you put an ampersand in one place and you didn't put the corresponding ampersand in the other place, the compiler will tell you that doesn't match. The whole point of the prototype is for just that reason, to make sure that you didn't later on misuse it. Okay, now that we have a lot of tools, we're going to go back to character processing. Remember, I introduced character processing. Just to review, when you process characters, you read them in one character at a time. Remember that blanks and new lines and tabs all are characters, white space. And we now have to consider, when we look at our input, character by character. A character is one byte in memory, and we can read them in using the put, and we can by the get and the put methods, and processor. What I want to do is, last time I showed you a very simple function that simply read in a byte, put it out. Read in a byte, put it out. Read in a character, put it out. So we basically copied something. Now I want to do something very similar, but I want to capitalize all lowercase letters while I'm doing it. I want to read a file, whatever it might be. It may have numbers in it, it may have other things in there, punctuation marks. What I want it to do is to capitalize, however, whatever it finds as a lowercase letter, convert it into a capital letter. Okay? In addition, I want it to double space. Whatever was a single space, it should do a double space. So we basically have two issues. We know we can read a character in at a time until there are none left. That we did last time. But now the question is, A, how do I capitalize, and how do I double space? Well, double space is pretty easy. I read a character, and if it's a new line character, I just put out two of them instead of one of them. That will double space. Wherever I see one new line, I will put in two new lines. That double spaces. What about capitalization? So this requires a little bit a trick. So let's go over, look at the trick first, and then we'll look at the program. Now, if you were to look up the codes, the ASCII codes for the alphabet, you would find two pieces of information you probably should memorize in the back of your minds. Although I really never hold you to memorize it, but it's something very useful. One is that the value of a capital A is 65. That's the ASCII code for A. And the value for lowercase a is 97. Now, what do I mean? Just to remind you what this means. If I say int c, and then I say c equals a, and then I say c, then I say c out c, what will it print? 65. On the other hand, if I said in parallel, char D, let's say, D equals A, and say C out D, what will it print? Capital A. Okay? What's the reason for this? It's because when I say int C, the variable's prepared to hold an integer, the character A is just a shortcut for the number 65, so it puts it into the variable C. And when you then say C out this variable, since this variable is an integer, it finds the number 65 there and it prints it out. In this case, we're telling the computer that the storage should be a character. When I say D equals A, it's still putting in the number 65 into the variable D. But when it says C out, it looks at D, that, oh, you're a character. So it takes the 65 and converts it into the character A, and it prints out a capital A. Question? Whenever we talk about a single char at a time, it's single quotes. Whenever we talk about a string of characters, it's a double quotes. Right now, we're talking only about individual characters, or using only single quotes. Because that's how I show you that I'm talking about the character A. How do I know it's not a variable A? Maybe it would be a variable called A, or a variable called monkey, or a variable called X. I'm not talking about the variable, I'm talking about its value. Yes, that's the ASCII code. Okay, that's the code that it uses to keep track. Remember, it only can put numbers in there, and then it has to figure it out. Now, because characters are really numbers, we can do arithmetic. In other words, as you might not be surprised, is that if I was to say, let's say something like this, care E. And then say, E is assigned the value of A plus 1. And then say, C out E. What do you think is going to be printed out? And say what? So, and what do you think that letter is? B. Okay? This will print out a capital B. Okay? And if I said plus 2, it would print out a C. Now you have to know your ABCs. So go home and sing A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Make sure you know your whole alphabet. Okay? Okay. Now, if this is the case, the following might be true. Capital A minus lowercase a, which would be what piece of arithmetic? 65 minus 97 should be exactly the same as capital B minus lowercase b, because that would be 66 minus 98. And capital C minus lowercase c would be also the same, because that would be 65, 66, 67 minus 97, 98, 99, which is again going to be the same value. In other words, let's think about this for a moment. If I give you a lowercase letter, whatever it might be, okay, let's say C is some lowercase letter, then if I go ahead and say to you, C plus A minus A, whatever C was beforehand, it is now capital letter. Since A minus B is what? Minus 32, right? Because what is 65 minus 97? Negative 32. So if you take a lowercase letter, let's say 99, which is lowercase d, and you add to it a negative 32, you're going to get a capital D. If you take a lowercase z, whatever that happens to be, and subtract from it 32, or add from it to a negative 32, you will get a capital Z, because the distance we just showed between the uppercase letters and the lowercase letters is always negative 32, right? Now, would you rather remember the number 32, or would you just rather just write down A minus A and not have to worry about, on a test, 65, 97, you know, it's not a football game, you know, you have to memorize the numbers. As long as you write down A minus A, that's to be the same thing as Z minus Z and B minus B and C minus C. So instead of remember, it would work also if you wrote C minus 32. But you'd have to remember one more piece of useless information to stuff in your minds. It's much easier to simply understand the concept of the difference between capital and lowercase letters and then add that to C. That'll always convert it. And by the way, if you want to convert from an uppercase to a lowercase, you would just subtract it instead of add it. Because if you subtract a negative number, you're really adding a positive number. So if you have a capital 65 and to that you add 32, you get 97, which is a lowercase. If you have a capital B, which is 66, and you add 32, you get 98, which is capital B, and so on and so forth. Okay? Now, this, of course, only works if we're talking about letters of the alphabet. There's no such thing as a capital 1 and a capital 2. There's no such thing as a capital question mark. Okay, so before we do this little thing, we got to make sure that we're looking at a character. In particular, we got to make sure we're looking at a lowercase character. Well, how do you know if something's a lowercase character? Well, come on, your alphabet. And what? Well, I don't know, care what the what is, but it's got to be between lowercase a and lowercase z. Isn't it easier to remember lowercase a than lowercase z than to remember 97 and... I don't know, 97 plus 32 is 100, whatever that is, right? And I'll make a mistake. It's certainly easy to say quote A and quote Z and say it's got to be equal, less than or greater than So it's much easier to do it that way. Yes?
Silly question. An example, you are C.
Not for A and A, those are constants. The C would have to be declared as char C. Let's look at the program then to do this. So you have this program, it's called, not surprisingly, capitalize in double space. And I've got several versions of this program. So the first version of the program, which is capitalize and double space one, let's run it first. And I'll show it again. Now here comes the console, and I will type as I did before. The cat in the hat. Enter. Do you see what it just did? Capitalized and double space. The sun did not shine. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And blah, 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 blah. Okay? And now let's put in some numbers and punctuation marks and lowercase letters and uppercase letters. And what's it doing? Doing two things. Double spacing. If I put in one enter, it's putting in two. And if it's a lowercase letter, it's capitalizing it. Otherwise, it's just sending it on its merry way. So let's look at the code to do this. And of course, how do I stop this? How do I say I don't want no more? Control Z. And I set the key to continue, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Let's look. Okay. Nothing new up here. In C. And here is our little loop, which starts here and ends here. Which basically says, do this over and over again until there are no more characters. That's our C idiom, while not cin.eof. So this is very much like that program copy file that we did. C equals cin.get, pick up a character. Let's see if it's a lowercase letter. This is what we said before. If C, I'm on this line right now, and I'm reading it, of course, from the middle in. If C is greater than or equal to quote a quote, in other words, 97, and C is less than or equal quote Z quote, what do you conclude? It must be a what? If C is greater than or equal to 97 or A and less than or equal to Z, what must C be? A lowercase letter. In which case, what do we want to do to it? So we'll say C out dot put C plus A minus A, which we just showed puts out the equivalent capital letter. Else, if it's not a lowercase letter, if C equals slash N, what does that mean? It's the enter key. Then what do I want to do? So C out dot put. I put out two of them. Now remember, I can't combine this into one statement because the put can only deal with one character at a time. If it's not a lowercase letter and it's not the enter, what must it be? Anything else? A punctuation mark, a number. And what do I want to do in that case? Simply send it on its way, put it out. And then go back and get the next character. And do this until there are none left. Now I did this from C out and C in. So whatever I typed, what happens if I want to do this to a file? So let's look at our second version of this program. This is called capitalize and double space 2. Oh no, not yet. Let's hold off for one moment. What happens if, for some reason, this piece of information is not true? That, in other words, the lowercase letters and the uppercase letters are equal distance from each other. There might be other languages in which lowercase letters and uppercase letters are not defined the same way. Okay? I know in Hebrew it's different, because there is no such thing as really uppercase letters. Okay, and I don't know how it is in Arabic, but you uppercase first letters of every word or every sentence or... No? Okay, anyway, but there are... Let's say we didn't have this assumption in English. Or for that matter, let's say you totally forgot this on a test. You forgot that A minus A is a capital letter. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody wrote a routine for us, just like they wrote a square root routine for us, that automatically converted from lowercase to uppercase? And we didn't have to worry about the details. Then we better use that method, and we trust that that method works for all languages, however they we decided to, you know, design those languages. Just as we had a C math library, there is a character type library called C type. Okay? The first C is for the language C, and the second C is character type. So it's the C character type library, CC type. And this library has some very useful functions. One of the functions is called toUpper. And what do you think that function does? If you give it a lowercase letter, it will give you back the uppercase. It'll have another function in there called isLower. What do you think isLower does? Remember I told you what every function starts with the word is means? What was our convention? If a function starts with the word is, what does is that mean? It's a Boolean function. So if I have a function called isLower, you would assume that it returns true or false depending on something is upper or lowercase. So look at this function, which is exactly the same as the one before, except that it uses the CC type library. Instead of doing it ourselves, we're going to rely on someone else's work, which is always good to blame it on somebody else. Get someone else to do your work. Let's look at this. Compare them at home side by side. Int C, no different than before. By the way, why do I say int C here and not char C? Do you remember? That's not why. I could do them with characters too. Remember that if a control Z is put into it, which is what this is going to assume, then you always have to have int rather than char. Remember that while every letter in the alphabet and every punctuation marks can fit into one byte, a control Z needs more than one byte. And therefore, I have to, if I'm going to ultimately put in a control Z, then I got to quote int C. If I'm never going to put a control Z in, then I would just say char C and save the space. Yeah?
Would it be confusing if it was straight?
It would be totally different. None of these things would work. First of all, get and put only work for characters. And the C-type library, as its name implies, only works for individual characters. Strings are a totally different animal, which we will learn about much later on. You would have to bang a little bit on the keyboard. It actually would still stop, but it would cause you may get some gibberish in your files at the end. Let's just look at this function and compare it with the previous one. And actually, you can compare almost side by side because they do exactly the same thing. First, we start by saying while not cin.eof, which essentially says read a character one at a time until there are none left. C equals cin.get. Same thing as before. Now I simply say if is lower C, relying now on the built-in function is lower, rather than actually checking to see. And isn't this clearer than what I did before? Before you wrote little letter A, less than or equal, C, and greater than, and so on. This is so much clearer. Besides, it's less typing, less likely to make mistakes. So if is lower C, what do I want to do? I want to convert it to A. So I say, cout.put to upper C. To upper C is a function that, given the lowercase C, converts it into an uppercase character, and then the put puts it out. Remember, it's inside. Look at the parentheses. Take the C, two upper it, send that to put, put sends it out. Else of C equals slash N, C output slash N slash N, else C output put C. No different than before. The only difference is that instead of relying on me doing the arithmetic, I'm relying on the library function to do it. Instead of me doing the if statement to determine whether something's the lowercase letter, I'm calling the function built-in is lower to do that. And so, this function works exactly the same. What we need to do, very briefly, and you can do this at home and just review it, is to look at what else is in the C-type library. Now, just like when we talked about the math library, I told you there's a square root in there, and there's a power one in there, and there's a sine and a cosine, but there are lots of others, hundreds of others. In fact, if you Google C-math, you'll get a full list of everything that's in there. Or if you do the help C-math, you will get a list. The C-type library is also a very big library. I just want to run through a few of the functions that are in there, and you can study them at home. And these are just a few of the useful ones that we might use from time to time. So here's a few of the useful functions that are in there. There are many others. Here's a list. First, there's a function called isAlphanumeric, which returns true if the character that you send it is a letter of the alphabet or the digits 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9. But if it's a punctuation mark, if it's a blank, if it's anything else, it's false. Alphanumeric means letters of the alphabet or digits. Anything else would be false. Every function that starts with the word is going to be a Boolean function, true and false. Then we have a function called isAlpha. What do you think that does? It returns true if the character is an alphabetic character, that is any of the letters, uppercase or lowercase letters, but false if it's anything else, which means digits would make this one false also. Then we have isControl. Okay, now I'm going to leave this one out for a moment. More importantly isDigit. isDigit will return true if something is a digit 0 through 9, or false if it's anything else. Another useful one, isLower. Well, isLower is exactly the opposite of isUpper. Okay, I will leave isPrintout. Useful. isPunct. What do you think that means? If it's a punctuation mark, it's true. If it's not a punctuation mark, anything else, it's false. This one is going to be very useful. Is space. Remember our definition of what a space is? White space is not just a blank. It's the tab, the new line character. So if C is a space, a horizontal tab, a carriage return, now there's something called a vertical tab, which moves the paper up and down a bit rather than just jump over this way. And there is something called a form feed, which is slash F, which makes the paper jump to the next sheet of paper. It makes the printer vomit out one whole sheet of paper, which is good whenever you want to start at the top of the next sheet. Slash F. Slash T is a tab. Slash F is a form feed. Slash N is a new line. And the blank is a space. Now, rarely you'll be doing with hexadecimal digits rather than just digits. And you'll want to know whether something is a hexadecimal digit. A hexadecimal digit is what? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, A, B, C, D, E, F. Right? Those are the hexadecimal digits. So if you need to know whether something is a valid hexadecimal digit, you can use is hex, is X digit. And then we add the functions called toLower, which given a character returns that character lowercased, and toUpper, if you give it a lowercase letter, it will give us back the uppercase. So there are many others, but these are the important ones that I just went over that you should know about. And all of these, in order to use them, you have to make sure that in the program you include CC type.